Good morning. We're ready to hear the final case of the morning in the matter of Zurn. Ms. Getzendanner.
Good morning, Judge Easterbrook, Judge Wood, Judge Ripple. May it please the court, I represent Mary Ann Zurn, who's the appellant. I'd like to focus the argument on the point in time when the bankruptcy judge decided to abstain in the Zurn and the Body cases, and he remanded those cases back to the state court. There's no dispute that the purpose of the remand was to allow the state court to determine Body's claims in bankruptcy. So that was the purpose of the remand order. Now, we believe that the state courts have finally decided those claims and that they are equal to zero. The first claim was a claim for sanctions against Mrs. Zurn in her case brought against Mr. Body, her former divorce lawyer. In that case, the appellate court reversed outright the judgment for sanctions granted to Mr. Body.
Now, Mr. Your Body, understanding that Mr. Body could revive that case at this point in the state court?
No, and he's admitted that he cannot, Judge. Let me refer to SA 46, which is something that is not focused on in the briefs. In the first full paragraph of that page, Mr. Body notes that as a result of the Zurn case being dismissed with prejudice, the exact same sanctions motion, which resulted in a judgment against Mrs. Zurn some 6 years ago, may now be brought before the DuPage trial court within 30 days of the April 7th, 2000 final judgment. So after the case was dismissed with prejudice, Mr. Body could have gone in, according to his own statement, and said to the judge, I want to reopen this, I want to refile my motion for sanctions, I'm entitled to do that. So there's no question that even if the appellate court's order is not an outright reversal of that judgment, he had an opportunity after the case was dismissed with prejudice, and he did not take that opportunity.
Now, has Mrs. Zurn tried to bring a separate suit in state court for her restitution claim?
No, Your Honor. We thought that the bankruptcy court had ample jurisdiction to grant that relief, and that's where we sought it. We have not been successful in the state court.
Suppose as part of a Chapter 13 reorganization, a debtor agrees to continue making payments on his car, and the Chapter 13 is wrapped up, and later the car breaks down and he gets into a warranty dispute with the manufacturer. Can that warranty dispute be brought back and adjudicated in the bankruptcy court?
I don't think so. But if the warranty dispute was ongoing at the time the bankruptcy ended, and the bankrupt specifically reserved his right to continue to press that warranty charge, that's what we're talking about here.
Well, I don't understand why that would make any difference.
Because
to reserve a right to continue to press it just means to continue to press it in the ordinary way, which would presumably be to file a claim and, if necessary, a lawsuit in state court.
The claim was remanded to the state court not to adjudicate the claim, but to determine the amount of the claim in bankruptcy court. That was the purpose of the remand. But state courts have now determined that those claims are zero. And the question is,
you thought the bankruptcy court was treating the state judge as a sort of special master?
Yes.
I don't think there's any constitutional authority for that.
I don't think so either, Judge. I think the bankruptcy court...
Then we can't behave as if the state court were some kind of special master.
The judge had the
right... The only way judgments of state courts can be reviewed is in the Supreme Court of the United States. They can't be reviewed by bankruptcy judges.
We're not asking to reopen these cases to have them reviewed by the bankruptcy court. Mrs. Zurn paid these judgments because she could not afford to pay interest on the judgments to keep that bankruptcy case alive. The bankruptcy judge was perfectly willing to keep that case alive, but while the state court...
I don't understand that. Anybody who has the funds to pay a judgment has the funds to post a supersedious bond.
She could have posted a supersedious bond, Judge, because her home was worth more than Body judgments. But she was unable to do that in the state court because the title to her house was still held jointly with her former husband, who refused to cooperate. So the filing a supersedious bond was not doable. That's why she filed bankruptcy. when she filed bankruptcy, that's what brought Boddy's claims into the bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court had full jurisdiction, and he said he had jurisdiction to decide those claims. He said it was his
obligation. The real question is when he closes the bankruptcy. I think this is what Judge Easterbrook was getting at. What authority is there to reopen the whole thing at this point, as opposed to, you know, maybe Mrs. Zern doesn't like the state courts, but if the state courts have the authority to entertain her action for restitution and is not barred by limitations, she has a remedy. And I would have thought from your Rooker-Feldman argument, which, as I understand, basically is that she doesn't want anyone to change a comma of what the state court did, so there's no review that she's interested in. She just wants their results accepted and plugged into whatever other proceedings there are. But it's the idea of going back and completely reopening a closed bankruptcy proceeding instead of pursuing a state court remedy that I have trouble with.
It was closed, subject to being reopened under Section 350 of the Bankruptcy Code, which permits the bankruptcy judge broad discretion to reopen the case to grant relief to the debtor. Now, we believe that since the payment of these claims was provisional, made without prejudice to her right to continue to appeal those.
Ms. Getzmanners, I'm sure you know, we actually have a very large jurisprudence on when bankruptcy judges can be reopened, when bankruptcy cases can be reopened, to deal with subsequent turns in state litigation. I'm surprised your brief doesn't cite any of them.
It's like
we have
Barnes
a series
case.
Of cases which includes the Iowa Railroad reorganization and Pettibone against Easley, which holds that it is not within the bankruptcy judge's power to do the kind of thing you're asking. You're effectively asking us to overrule those cases, but your brief doesn't cite any of them.
Your Honor, the bankruptcy judge originally ruled that he had no jurisdiction because the plan did not specifically provide for the remedy of returning to the bankruptcy court. Our position is that the plan should be read.
Just like Pettibone say that even if the plan had so provided, the bankruptcy judge lacked jurisdiction to provide any such thing. Bankruptcy judge doesn't have authority to say, I'm seizing control over the future life of the debtor.
All right, Judge, let me go on to the next point. Let's assume that we should go to the state court. What the district court did in this case was hold that Mrs. Zern's right to be reimbursed is gone. It's gone forever because she had the obligation to file that claim for restitution within the same cases in which the judgment was entered.
Now it sounds like, this is a large part of your brief, it sounds like you're asking us to review the district judge's opinion, but all we review are its judgments.
If I were to go to state court and sue Mr. Boddy for the return of the money, Mr. Boddy will argue that my right to do that has been foreclosed by the district court's opinion.
Obviously not foreclosed by the judgment. All the judgment says is, I have no jurisdiction to resolve this. And that's all we review, the judgment, not the opinion.
If that is his judgment, and I am not going to be barred in state court from bringing this claim, a separate suit for restitution, I'm content to leave this court. I should never appeal to the district court in the first place. I should go right to the state court. And in fact, Mrs. Zern now lives in Virginia, so I'm going to bring a diversity case in this court, although I've retired, so I don't know what I'm going to do about that. But you're right, Judge. I can file that case. I can file it for unjust enrichment. And if the district court's judgment is made clear that it's not deciding that issue, then I'm content to have this court do that. I would rather you reversed outright and allow the bankruptcy judge to exercise his discretion. I think there's no question that when we reserve the right to continue those appeals of those judgments, no one in that court doubted that we were entitled to the return of the money if we had those judgments defeated. Now, if we go to the state court and say, Judge, you were supposed to determine the amount of this bankruptcy claim. You've now determined the claim is zero. We want you to compel Mr. Boddy to return the money to us. That state court judge would say, well, go to the bankruptcy court. I'm sure that's what he would do. He'd say, go to the bankruptcy court. He made you pay that money. It was a bankruptcy court payment. If you want that money back, go to the bankruptcy court. That's why we went to the bankruptcy court. We were concerned what would happen in the state court.
I think the technical statement is it was the judgment of the state court that compelled the payment of money, and the federal bankruptcy court said that he would not interfere with that judgment. He lifted the stay.
The claim was not the judgment. The claim was the underlying claim for sanctions and for attorney's fees, as well as the judgment. If the judgments were just the judgments that were reversed by the Illinois Appellate Court...
No, you missed my point. The obligations adjudicated in bankruptcy don't come from bankruptcy law. They come from underlying entitlements under state law.
Yep.
It's not, I'm doing this because the bankruptcy process made me. I'm doing it because I had a debt payable under state law.
But the bankruptcy court determines...
An essential understanding of bankruptcy law.
The bankruptcy court determines the claim. He filed the claims in bankruptcy court.
It doesn't determine the claim. It determines the creditor's proportionate take on a claim.
And
state law determines the claim.
The bankruptcy court never made that determination. He had the claims in front of him. He had jurisdiction to adjudicate those claims. And he said, I'm not going to do it. They're all state law questions. I'm going to let the state court do it. The bankruptcy court never decided. In fact, he specifically stayed the adversary proceeding, which contained Mrs. Zern's defenses to these claims. He said, I'm going to wait till I get those cases back from the state court. That's what happened. But I'm content, Judge, if you make it clear in your opinion that I can go and sue Mr. Boddy for any whatever claim she has under state law. I will be content with that. But I was astounded at the district court reaching for that issue. It's certainly not what the bankruptcy court held. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Ms. Katzenbecker. Mr. Swofford.
Morning, Your Honor. Steve Swofford on behalf of Mr. Boddy and his law firm.
Mr. Swofford, why are we here? And your client got a judgment against Ms. Zern. The judgment is reversed. Why hasn't your client made restitution?
That's really a matter for the state courts to decide whether or not he has to make full restitution. I would say with regard
to normal behavior, the judgment is paid, the judgment is reversed, the judgment creditor pays it back. Your client comes here looking pretty much like a scoundrel.
Well, not with regard to the fee case, because he's still holding that money under a claim of right, and that money should be administered in the state court proceeding where it belongs.
What state court proceeding? Well, have you filed a state court proceeding to establish your entitlement to keep the money?
No, we haven't. But nor did...
If your client were a member of our bar, we would be inclined to begin disciplinary proceedings. And this is astounding behavior for a lawyer in litigation to glom onto money after a judgment is reversed.
Still in all, there does remain the dispute, and even whether the nature of his conduct has to be resolved in court. From your point of view, it's our position.
If it was your client's position that the entitlement should be resolved in court, one would have expected your client to file an appropriate petition in an appropriate state court.
Well, I would have expected Mrs. Zern to file a petition too. I mean, that works both ways, Your Honor.
However, was happy with where things wound up. She won in the Illinois Appellate Court, and she's willing not to pursue the battery claim, which is the only thing that she might have continued with. And your client seems to have decided that it's easier to just sit on this money that he got from her instead of going in to adjudicate whatever rights he may have to any money from her. But right at the moment, he is kind of taking a possession is 10/10 of the law approach.
Well, I don't know that he takes the position that the possession is absolutely the law. I mean, both parties sat on this. There was no demand made on Mr. Boddy for a year. There was never a demand made until these actions were brought.
And he is keeping it.
I'm sorry?
Taking steps, maybe in the wrong court, maybe the wrong way.
But there's no doubt she wants the money back.
There's no doubt now
at the end
she
of
wants the
state court
back.
Litigation, she won. And there's no doubt that your client, despite the fact that he lost in the state case, and he knows his adversary wants the money back, is refusing to pay, and refusing to initiate litigation in state court.
Well, the cases were remanded to the state by the appellate court to the state trial court for further litigation. All right. Neither party, both parties slept on their rights and didn't reinstate the cases. The effect of that under Illinois law is very unclear to me, and I don't know how this case will ultimately resolve itself if the court does get it back. This court does send it back. Let it stay in the state court.
But the point is, he had a turnover obligation to give her that money back, and if he later on actually won in some hypothetical state court proceeding that he instituted, then she'd have an obligation again to pay him something. You know, we don't know what, but at the moment that this litigation comes to us, the ball was in his court to pay her.
I understand the court's unhappiness with my client as a lawyer not reimbursing this money.
The question is whether you and your client understand that what's going to happen is that that unhappiness will be reported in an opinion published for the world to see in the Federal Reporter Third Series.
Oh, I think I realize that, Your Honor.
Does your client realize
that?
This is something that shouldn't be
for
a variety of reasons.
It shouldn't have happened. I sense that the depth of the court's feeling against my client is because he was a lawyer. If he wasn't a lawyer, though, and this happened, it was just a debtor-creditor situation, it's not unusual at all for the parties to just sit and wait and see if my opponent's going to come and get the turnover order or not. I mean, and that's the way this case was supposed to work. It was supposed to stay in the state court, and it was supposed to proceed to judgment in the state court.
But the Illinois courts permit ancillary proceedings for this kind of restitution. There are quite a few decisions that you can find a fairly quick look. So I don't see anything in Illinois law that requires that kind of turnover order to be brought in the same proceeding if you're happy with the outcome that the Illinois appellate court has given you.
Ancillary proceedings are usually brought within the same case.
But they don't have to be in the Illinois courts.
They are not necessarily brought as a matter of reinstating case. I agree with that. So that's what should be done in this case. I mean, that's our position. This case should be in the state court where it belongs, with Mrs. Zern bringing whatever action she feels she has, and my client asserting whatever right he has to at least a good portion of these funds. And that's basically all that Judge Weedoff said should happen. He looked at the situation. He said this was the final order entered 5 years ago. Nothing's changed. Why are you here? Go back to the state court and get this matter resolved. That's all this case boils down to as far as what the bankruptcy court did. The correctness of if you were reviewing the Judge Weedoff's decision. Well, I think bad facts, bad law or something. I do believe, however, that Judge Weedoff was well within his discretion in sending the case back where it never should have left. And I would ask that the court affirm Judge Weedoff's decision, unless there are any more questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Swan.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Getzendanner?
Counsel's statement that there was no demand is certainly not a matter of record in this court. This is new counsel to the case. He's not familiar with the correspondence. There is correspondence making a demand on Mr. Boddy for the return of these funds. There's no question that for 10 years they've been litigating against each other and that Mr. Boddy's vengeance is what's driving his refusal to pay this money. I asked the Illinois Appellate Court recently to remove the ban on their opinion which describes Mrs. Zern's lawsuit, and the Appellate Court denied that motion. It occurred to me to ask this court to publish the Rule 23 order as part of this court's order so that the world can understand why it is this has been going on for 10 years, Judge. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ms. Getzendanner. The case will be taken under advisement.